stop that hammering.
Stop the hammering! Stop the hammering! Stop the hammering!
Jesus Christ. Hey, hello humans. Welcome to Audio Face, the premier podcast on the Syndicate 23 network, unlike the Made It podcast, that is the second tier podcast.
Woo!
On the Syndicate
23
network.
Wow, Sean. Welcome back.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 19 of
Audio of Face.
Because
Audio Face.
Hashtag free Sean. Sean is back. I'm not sweating.
Sean is back.
I'm making my living sweat and spandex.
Welcome
living.
Back.
Tammy, you're out for the next, like, 3-4 months whenever I race again. I don't know when that is, because I need my seat back.
We will have Tammy back.
Yeah, we have Tammy.
We got good feedback on Tammy. By the way, my name is Dan. I'm Dan from the internet. I'm also hosting this podcast with Sean.
Sorry, guys. I had to come out just hitting it hot.
Guns blazing. So, firstly, welcome to Audio Face. We're going to be talking about music news and culture and things like that. The We Made It podcast, also on the Syndicate 23 network. They're going to have a special 20th episode that you should definitely listen to, but we have a special 19th episode because we don't need round numbers to be cool. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about Open Mike Eagle's new album, the Prophets of Rage's new album. That's a new band. It's like a new group. It's a
new
super
group.
That's
super
cool.
Group.
The Killers' new album, The Horrors' new album.
Oh, God, yes.
And a bunch of other news. There's a lot of... As Caesar from the We Made It podcast would say and eat, meat and potatoes, as he would. Maybe lay off the meat and potatoes a little bit. But, anyways, firstly, Sean, last week Tammy and I, on the last episode of Audio Face, you should definitely listen to if you haven't already, but why haven't you already? Tammy and I talked about the Foo Fighters' new album, Concrete and Gold, was I right?
Yes.
Right? Neither of us had listened to the Foo Fighters a lot beforehand. We just listened to a couple songs, like, beforehand, like, the big singles, and that album, like, the new album that came out, and we were kind of very lukewarm on it. There weren't a lot of songs we really liked. I mean, Sky's Neighborhood is still in my head, but that's the only really song that kind of stuck with me, and Tammy kind of had the same opinion. But, because you have listened to the Foo Fighters before, and that's something that, like, you are definitely into... I wanted to get your quick take on the album before we... Just to, like, really give it justice. So what are your thoughts?
Okay, so... I've been listening to Jesus Christ since I was a kid. I've liked them. And this album, I liked overall, but it wasn't... It was kind of like their last album where it didn't... Nothing, like, really caught my eye. Catch my ear would be a better term, whatever damn English is. And it was just overall, like...
Nothing notable.
Yeah, a solid B. Like, B plus, maybe. Where it was too... It was in your face, and then it'd go quiet all of a sudden. And I did not like it. I didn't like the way the transitions were of the songs at all. Like, Skies and Neighborhood's a good song. I was really, really looking forward to the album, because when they released that, I go, oh, wow, they might change their sound, make it rock, but with, like, a little... alternative in the background and stuff, maybe some synth, kind of like what the Horrors did, which we're gonna go into detail.
That's what I was expecting.
And that's what I was expecting in a way, because I'm like, you know what, they're gonna try something different, but they stuck with their guns. And it's kind of like Drones with Muse 2 years ago, how I was like, it's an okay album. I wish they kind of pushed the envelope like they did in 2012, but this one they did that exactly
like Muse
that.
Is perfectly capable of doing.
And Foo Fighters, I didn't know if they're capable of doing, because they've kind of had this same flow for the past 20 years or so of, like, pretty in-your-face hard rock. And the problem is that you can kind of pick and choose songs, like with the Queens of Stone Age before this past album, of it might sound good in a different album because they're so similar, if that makes any sense. Like, there's no defined line between each album. And it's okay. Like, I like it. Overall, but
it lacks that progression that we really kind of
look exactly
for, right?
And it was really lacking creativity in that way, where they kind of just stuck with their guns, didn't really push the envelope. Only on like two songs they did that, really.
That's what I agreed. I liked Happily Ever After, whatever that song was.
Happy Ever After, Sky's Neighborhood, those are the two ones where they kind of hinted at changing it up a bit, but other than that, it was kind of just bog standard. What they've been doing for the past
It sucks when
years.
Your sing It really sucks when your singles are your the only like stepping point, the only time you really push the limits.
Yeah,
because, like,
and then you blow
your album
blow
is
your
supposed
load.
To be your full work, right?
Yeah,
we're about to talk about full work in a moment, right? But the album is like where you give your full work, and your if anything, singles tend to be more conservative, like showing your full work while kind of like showing it in the constraints of what is the best or the most, like, to use a kind of German word, earwormy kind of tune to, like, put your album out there. That's usually what you want to do. But it seems like, for me, the Foo Fighters did that in reverse.
Right.
They tried their hardest on their two best songs, and those are great songs, and the rest of the album just didn't pull the weight.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, you hit it on the nail there. So, I mean, you guys already talked a lot about it before, but I just wanted to chime in,
right,
give a little bit more just to solidify it, and yeah.
Alright, so next we're going to review The Horrors' new album, 5, and it was interesting because I was building the rundown and I was looking at albums that were coming out, and I was like, okay, The Killers we're definitely doing.
Yeah.
They're a band a lot of people know about. Prophets of Rage, that's a super group. We're going to be getting to that in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Open Mike Eagle, I wanted to put on the rundown, and I really wanted to give it a listen because I've heard a lot of buzz about Open Mike Eagle, and I honestly haven't heard a lot of his work, so I wanted to kind of go in and I have some thoughts about that. But The Horrors, I kept seeing on the usual places I was, like, researching. I kept seeing, like, oh, it's a new album that they're out. It's a new album that's out. And a lot of new albums come out every single week. We can't listen to all of them. I kind of really kind of listen to, well, partially what are other people talking about, but partially what are things I kind of take a chance on. And yeah, a lot of people were talking, a lot of sites were talking about The Horrors, but
I heard,
it wasn't too many sites to where I felt like, okay, no, I have to do it. It was like, oh, it popped up more than I would usually expect it to.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give it a shot. And so, Sean, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I totally forgot about them, because I heard them on Morning Becomes Eclectic 3 years ago or something like that. I'm like, okay, these...
Sean's favorite radio show, the official radio show of Audio Face.
Because they're the only radio show that plays good fucking music. Like, really, in this day and age, that's it.
What, you don't like Morning Zoo?
It's okay. Yeah. MBE.
I'm just fucking with you. Continue.
Yeah, I know. That's someone just it's MBE, man. You can't. MBE's on a pedestal that is never going to be taken down.
MBE, you know me.
Right? Anyways, I listened to them a little bit, but never got into them. Just I heard like a couple songs here, and I'm like, okay, they're kind of a chill indie group. They did some hard stuff earlier, and I like just never thought big of them, I guess, because they just were like a normal whatever band. And then Dan puts this in the rundown. I'm like, okay, cool. God, I forgot about them. Let me just have a listen. Jesus Christ. This is like a masterpiece of an album. I'm like literally shocked. The first song, I didn't know what to expect at all, because I knew they were trying to change their sound and whatnot and do something different. I'm like, all right, as I always say, because that's like my obsession, is do something different, or you can do something of the same but make it slightly different. Do, you know, have a new take. Good God, if this
rule number like four of Audio.
Yeah,
face.
If this is what alternative music can be, like. I like was jaw dropped for the first song on Hologram opens the album. It's just it's amazing. It's really big, heavy synth with guitar, drum, vocals. But the vocals are kind of they're not overpowered at all. They're pretty understated. Just in the back, it's like floaty, but not at the same time. It's really hard to explain. But I've had this album on repeat since listening to it. I mean, it's so good. I was super excited to tell Dan this, because I mean, there's so many songs that really took a bunch from all of my favorite artists, pretty much. There's, I can't pick out which song is which, because I haven't listened to it enough to really know what it's called, like, each title is. But there's a couple songs on here. I'd have to listen to the songs to make sure I'm getting them right.
Let me help you go through them, because
there was one.
Let me buttress what you said, yeah. And go ahead.
Well, because there was three songs that really stuck out to me. One of them sounded like it could have been an OK Computer because of the synth in the background. There was one that sounded almost like Demon Days, like the song Demon Days from Gorillaz, the opening, because it had strings in the background,
right.
And then opened up, because Demon Days just has strings and is kind of odd song at the end, right? Yeah, one of the beginning. Yeah, like the song Demon Days.
It's like strings. It's at the very beginning,
tropical kind of, but not like a song. It's just like instrumental with a little backing vocal. This one opened to strings and then turned into this beautiful song. They have an acoustic song, like it started with acoustic guitar, then broke down into this beautiful synth with acoustic on it. It's just, I mean, I don't even know where to begin on this. I'm generally shocked. I love this album. I want to hear your take now, because I can keep talking, but I really want to. He hasn't told me anything on it yet. He wanted it for me to be a surprise. So, have at it, Dan. Let's hear your take.
Yeah, I totally wanted to just get, like, what you were. I really wanted to get what you were saying about it, because one of the hardest things about doing this is, it's going the whole week without telling you how I feel about an album as, like, they come out or as I start listening to them, because otherwise, I want our reactions to the things we say to be, like, genuine and, like, right, really kind of, like, what we mean. And so it's, like, I don't want to, like, I don't want to have the same conversation twice and just record it the second time. That's just not fun at all.
No, that defeats the purpose of having this thing. And we want to tell the people, give us our general opinions, because we're so fucking picky, too. Especially me with music.
Yeah. I don't want one of us to bias each other. Because, like, we both respect each other's opinions on music. And so, like, I don't want to go, oh, well, he really likes this, but I didn't really like it. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm just, like, not getting it right. Or maybe I'll attribute it to another thing. So, it's my attempt to be, double blind.
Right.
That's not the right term, but you know what I mean, mm-hmm. right? But let's get to the music. Things you said that I super agree with. The band killing it, yes.
Yeah, right.
This was one of the better, like, songs. This is one of the better albums I've heard in a while. I cannot wait to figure out when they go on tour, because I would like to go see them.
Yeah, right.
Into the album itself, Hologram.
For song.
Yeah. They know how to start an album really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I really... They know how to start and end an album really well. I'll get to the end in a moment. But they know how to begin an album with, like, amazement, with excitement, with power, with passion. Like, some of the best album beginnings... Like, my favorite opener for an album was Give Life Back to Music from Random Access Memories by Daft Punk.
Right, because yeah.
It was just this big build-up and, like, satisfying sort of drop, if you will.
One of the best openings of an album ever, by far.
Yeah, Queens of the Stone Age is really good at this. Radiohead's very good at this.
Oh Baby, like, from LCD Sound Horde. System, like a couple weeks ago, the same thing.
Yeah,
really opening.
Like, yeah, the Horrors did that really well, and so I was like, this is very promising. I think Machine is the song that sounds a lot very okay computery, just because. It messes with the percussion a lot.
And it has that synthesizer. OK Computer synth that I literally haven't heard only in that realm of Radiohead that year. We know they have a lot of B-sides and stuff. I heard it in the background and go, oh my god, somebody used it. Like, nobody has used it since that came out. And I, like, got chills for a second. Holy shit, somebody had the balls to do it. They did it right. Like, oh my god, I couldn't get over it. Anyways, keep going. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, totally fine. Yeah, I think Ghost is the song you're talking about, but my favorite song was The Point of No Reply, just because, like, it actually gave me goosebumps. Like, I just love the beat of it. It reminded me kind of Gorillaz as well, just kind of on the bass line it has. Like, wow, this album, like, I was really thinking, like, it's very rare, and it hasn't happened very often the past couple of weeks. I've listened to an album, and I've thought about, like, I've made a little mental note about our, like, year-end reviews award show thing.
I did that within the first fucking song. I'm like, I listen to Hologram, I'm sitting there like, if this keeps up, this could easily be the best of the year, because I'm, like, in general shock, because I had no idea what to expect. The album cover is wild as hell.
Me neither.
Oh, I've never, God. Like, the album cover makes, like, me half uncomfortable as shit.
No. You know what it is? The album cover is, like, half Beck, half Blur.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, like, half Beck, half Blur. It's, like, three quarters... It's, like, 5/6 Beck, 1/6 Blur.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know the name of the guy's the lead vocal, but some of the songs he sound like Beck in two. It's like a combination of everything that is good of alternative the past 15 years put into an album.
20 years even.
20 years yeah. even. Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, because OK Computer. 20
Something
years.
To Remember Me By sounded like Roosevelt, man.
Right. Like just. God.
I had to do a double take when I finished the album. I was like, wait, does this entire album sound like Roosevelt? Or is it just like the song? And I heard some other songs like had some similar like similarities to Roosevelt and other like
but the thing,
alternative
yeah.
acts that are like that, that take things from the 80s and the 70s yeah. and the 90s and things like that. But it's still a little bit different. And yeah, I think
super different.
You really pointed out well. It incorporates a lot from some of the best alternative artists of the 21st century.
Also,
and kind of puts that all together without feeling like a blatant copy.
Yeah, and also all of the songs are, you know, 5-6 minutes long, and it didn't feel long. And none of the songs felt long. They felt complete. Like, the shortest song is 3:20, and that's the shortest song by about 2 minutes. So, it's... Everything sounded complete from top to bottom, and it was just beautiful. Like, listen to five people. Like, this is brilliant. Also, I read something that they made it five because they wanted to have it like, you know, in England, how you flip people off by showing them a reverse peace sign, a peace sign in America, and you reverse it. That's why flipping them off looks like a V. That's why they made the album five, because they're like, hey, we want to show people that we're flipping them off because we thought it'd be funny. And I'm like, wow, I fucks with you heavy. Just for trying to mess with people like that. It was really funny. Yeah, this is one of the best albums I've heard in... Crap, I don't even know. Maybe 10 years. Featuring Sirens of... The...
No. So, Sean, so firstly, you were doing a super awesome thing, which I'm proud of you for, like, as someone who, like, works in production, is that you kept talking so that in post, I'm gonna be able to mute my voice. And the Sirens won't be in post mostly.
There you go.
So, great job. Look at Sean the fucking professional over here.
Look at me.
He's a triathlete. He's a podcaster. He's fucking professional.
I'm a pianist. Let's do this.
Dude, you're killing it. Pearl White.
Pearl White, man. I got in.
All right. Secondly, back to the music. I love how you said, like, I want to jump out of my seat when you said, the songs don't feel long, they feel complete. And that's exactly, like, what I want from songs to be. Because some songs feel like they drag on too long. That's probably my biggest complaint with electronic music, I'd say. Songs drag on too long. Like, it doesn't get to the point. It's, like, rest too much of that buildup. It's just kind of droning on to me sometimes. But, no, everything here feels complete and succinct. And I love the way you pointed that out.
Right.
Best album of 10 years. I've only heard it twice. And...
Like, this is
I usually listen to most of these albums like 1.5 or 2 times, and I don't know if I can say that far just because I'm a rational human being.
Yeah.
But it was very early into the album, like in the running for like, okay, I have to acknowledge this somehow on the end of the year awards show, because like this is a phenomenal kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like for me, it's like it's one of the best I've heard in the past 10 years, where it's just so different, where they really modernize alternative, because as I've been saying for a while, it's alternative music is like in this really awkward void of where does it go? Like, is there room for it first
yeah.
off? Is there big popularity? Because there's a lot of bands that kind of keep producing the same thing over and over again, or they keep doing that stupid snare drum, which
like,
a lot of guys did this
year.
Well,
here's the thing. Like, electronic is gaining prevalence. It really doesn't have like market share as far as sales and things, but like culturally it is unavoidable.
Yeah.
As is trap, and it's like it's interesting to blend those together. It seemed like rock and rap, again, as we'll talk about later on, you're able to blend those together a little bit better. But it seems that electronic and trap it's kind of hard to blend those two together. So like, and that's getting really hard to combine. And so what alternative naturally kind of does, which is it takes the popular genres of the day and like kind of boosts creativity by like going a little bit outside of the norms of all those different genres. Like as it kind of did for rock since the 80s onward. That's kind of not happening now. And so some alternative sounding a little bit trappy, snare drum. Some alternative sounding a little bit overly electronic and overly produced and just, like, flat. Yeah. And it's really hard to sound fresh because they're mimicking fresh and trying to blend it together. And it's like trying to, like, blend egg yolk and beets and just, like, throwing them together and expecting to get, like, a smoothie.
You're right, and so this is the first one in a long time to be heavily electronic in some songs, and it go along with the instruments and be beautiful, where it's like, I really haven't heard anything like this in alternative, honestly, that I can remember, where it's like, they really pushed the limits, tried something completely different. All of the modern technology is there. You can hear it, but it's not overpowering. It just puts you into this landscape of like, whoa, what is this? This is awesome.
Yeah.
I really cannot recommend this album enough. I really, really want people to listen to it. And then to just let me just know what if they think the same thing, if they don't like it or this and that. Because I think, if this is the way that alternative can go, there's a place for it. There's room for it, where people are now starting to realize what they can do with electronic instruments along with normal string instruments, percussion, what you want. This is the perfect blend of all of those. And, yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't rave about it enough, really.
Surprise first take. Oh, great. Let's move on, shall we?
Yeah, so...
All right, so we've talked a lot about on Audio Face about Arcade Fire's new album, Everything Now,
and Wynn Butler being a bitch.
We've also talked about noted little bitch Wynn Butler for quitting Twitter. Mark this down for the Audio Face Awards: the little bitch of the year.
Little bitch of the year. Right. There's a lot. There's a lot that could go for that, but he's up there.
Yeah, alright. But anyway, so Wynn Butler spoke out a little bit about the fake news campaign surrounding Everything Now, and it's interesting. So, he was speaking to I'm reading off of NME right now. Give me a moment. He was speaking to Vulture, and he explained what inspired the concept, saying, quote, "A big question for us was, how do you release a record post-Donald Trump? Since we're making a record called Everything Now, and it would be coming out after the election, it felt like a real moment to try and address the subjects like fake news and how the media works. The other part of it is that when you make a record in this modern context, it instantly gets refracted in the media. There's all this side content, this trail that follows everything, so we thought that maybe we'd just make all that content as opposed to just making the art. That stuff was going to get made anyway, so why not make it ourselves? We just wanted to see where fake news articles about the band would go. The media is built for clicks now, and we were trying to see firsthand how it all works. I feel like now I understand it on a much deeper level why Trump got elected. Negativity is what travels."
Hashtag no politics.
God damn it.
What was that?
I forgot to mute my laptop. Someone always does it.
Rookie mistake. You know, that was the first thing I was scrolling down. I'm like, I think that was going to be a video. Let me mute it real quick. Sure enough, there was a video.
God damn it. All right. So what were you going to say?
I said hashtag no politics, but I see what they did. Like, it's an interesting theory, I guess you could say, with what they tried to do. He's still a little bitch, but it's just annoying of now just everybody talking about it, this and that. It's like, all right, this isn't negativity, the reason why, this and that. I'm like, there's so many other stuff that just generally a lot of artists don't understand. But I'm trying, it's hard because we try to be no politics on this podcast, but half the time.
By the way, this podcast is about to get hella politics.
I'm sorry. No, I was literally about
Prophets
to say
of
that.
Rage, it's Prophets of Rage's fault, but like, no. This podcast is about to get hella
politics. Yeah, I was about to say that because now the problem is that politics is huge in the music world, you know, and
coming to you live from Free Speech Studios in Berkeley, California.
Right, coming to you by from the bunker in Mochi Studios here in Long Beach, gay city.
Mochi Industries.
Yeah, Mochi Industries. That's the name of my cat, by the way. And it's annoying now where it's just everybody's like, oh, this is why he did it. This is why he got elected. blah, 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 because there's so many freaking artists doing that now who, like, they don't know what the hell they're talking about, if that makes any sense. And, like, they're just going off of the kind of the norm of what you say to get views, or what you say is this whole big mob mentality of people, and it's just
this played-out trope.
Yeah,
you're talking about, like, correct me if I'm wrong, we're talking about the played-out trope of, oh, we're all mindless drones who are looking at our screens, and, like,
yeah, exactly,
oh, this is what we've become, and look at, like, how far we've strayed from just, you know, putting it all down and disconnecting. Yeah. Like, that kind of played-out shit, right?
That and the whole, this is why he got elected, now I'm trying to figure out why, and this and that, I'm like, god damn it. It's pretty simple.
Sean, if you'll allow me to, like, hit the middle divider and skirt along that for 10 seconds,
right,
and get into politics. Everyone from Hillary Clinton to Wynn Butler wants to give their take on how Trump
right
won. And, like, they're all fucking wrong.
There's multiple
reasons. You can't pinpoint on one different thing. And by the way, just by saying multiple reasons, you need to point out the exact reasons. You need to point out why people weren't motivated to vote for Hillary Clinton. You need to point out why people were motivated to vote for Donald Trump. I think those are two different reasons. And I think both of those reasons are very worth going into, and they have sub-reasons.
Right.
But by, like, pointing it to by saying, oh, yeah, it's the fake news. Oh, yeah, it's this. Oh, yeah, it's that. Those are all sub-reasons that point from there.
Point to the larger, like, reason. And it's just, oh,
yeah,
my
and
God.
Now let's pull away from that. And maybe we'll vent more during Prophets of Rage.
Oh, I'm going to vent more big time in Prophets of Rage. Because they are woke as fuck. It's just annoying because,
right,
it's all of these people. I can't say more because I'm going to get way too heavy into politics. This isn't a politics.
Yeah, I'll say one last thing before we move on. You can move us on right after this.
Yeah.
Is that after reading this article, I actually softened up to the whole Arcade Fire thing a little bit because
a little bit,
and it's only because of my bias of being in the content mill industry.
Right.
I was joking with Sean earlier today that I was just like, oh, like I'm a takesmith now. I'm just, like, working all day, like, perfecting these, like, craft of, like, what I'm gonna send out into the endless, like, dregs of the internet, hoping
right
it gets enough shares or whatever, right? Like,
yeah,
that's kind of, it kind of does feel like this drowning mess, and, like, especially with, when I walk through Berkeley, seeing everyone just, like, glued to their fucking screens, and I'm fucking one of them, like, it's very weird for someone who's been alive for, even us, who grew up with the internet and grew up with this, like, portable technology. So I get, like, having that take and kind of, like, spreading it through networks. And I guess no other entity can get away with this than a music group.
Yeah, pretty
so
much.
If they're going to do this, then, like, at least it's a musician and not, like, a musician who's trying to be a politician. Kid Rock.
Right.
Next time Tammy's on, I'll have you on, Sean, and you can just have, like, Kid Rock off. Like, you can go... You can go have a field day.
Straight
want,
Marxism
okay?
on him.
All right. But, no, yeah, I warmed up a little bit, but Wynn Butler is still a little bitch.
He's always going to be a little bitch. So, going on to more little bitches, apparently the Kanye Jay-Z fucking battle has ended? Question mark? Maybe?
Bees?
They're set to reconcile and settle a legal battle. Maybe? I don't fucking
relating
know.
The title.
Relating to this beautiful streaming service called Tidal that we all love.
Big,
and
beautiful,
all
bolsterous, tremendous.
Tidal. Fucking Tidal. I hate that thing so much, but...
Yeah. But, you know, but anyway, so as you probably know, we've talked about this in the podcast before, but the Jigga Man says that... Yeezy says that the Jigga Man owes him $3 million.
But apparently, because, you know, he's broke, but Adidas, like, bought him out of the depths of the pores because, you know, he's buying too much stuff for his wife. What? What? Mm. Buying too much plastic surgery for the woman's... You know.
Let's try to keep the show as Kardashian-free as possible. I know we could, but I don't want to.
Right?
But,
oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're having that... I'm glad that hopefully this beef is, like, ending because... Or, like, I would love to have this beef end because... Watch the Throne. Jay-Z and... Kanye West together was a really great album. I think they make great music together. I think, like, as a producer, like, with Jay-Z, like, really great. And it's not like either one of their music has, like, faltered. If anything, maybe Kanye West's. But, like, I think they can be great friends. I think it's good in the industry. And I think given the political climate and, like, when we're recording around the exact time and, like, some of the things that are transpiring, I think it's important for, like, personally, I think it's important for, like, black entertainers and things just, like, kind of tie things up because there's bigger fish to fry, if you know what I mean.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's just, like, it's too played out. Like, what does it mean to play us out? It's just too much of that.
Like, stop the hammering.
Stop the hammering. Get that out of my ear. Now anybody can go in my ear. What is this?
Stop. And by the way, just for like full coverage, TMZ is reporting that Kanye and Jay-Z are gonna like meet soon to kind of settle the dispute and, you know,
like
hopefully
a divorced
that kind of
couple of the 21st
ends
century.
All that shit.
Like, who gets my yacht? Who gets my dog? You know, who can see the kids on Sunday?
Kids. Over there, over no church in the wild. Over no okay, church. Who gets the hook? Who gets the verse? All
right.
Okay, and then really fast, I did want to note that Jay-Z did a like performance of Numb/Encore, which was a song that Jay-Z did with Linkin Park. And in that article, you know, it's this like thing we've talked about on Audioface a lot about the importance of like mental health and watching yourself and taking care and things like that. Jay-Z said, hopefully his death serves as a wake-up call. Mental health is a real thing. You never know what people are going through. And you think, just because they're performers and he sold 14 million records, that doesn't equate to happiness. Money or fame doesn't mean anything if you're not happy inside. And so, yeah, again, it's just good that people are shouting these kind of things out.
Yeah, no, it's a very good sentiment of him and everything. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm glad that, like, these messages, like, they keep coming up. They keep flowing up to the top because it's good and important that they're heard. And relating to mental health things, I've been promising these videos since like May, but I actually am like 2/3 done with them, and I'll be done with the last one in the next week. The recording for Duty, another part of Syndicate 23, not a podcast but a series of videos. This series is going to focus on mental health, mental illness stuff, and that's going to come out for Mental Health Week, which is the first week of October.
Right.
Which is going to be a super fun week. That's the week I'll be in Mochi Industries for Gorillaz concert. And the week after that, do you realize that October 13th, other than the things I don't know are coming out, Wu-Tang Clan, Beck, Gucci Mane.
That's pretty good.
That's one week. That's all in one week.
Jesus.
That's going to be an episode.
Right. By the way, I just read a thingy right now. How much time do we have for this podcast? Because I can quickly go onto something I literally just read right now, if that's okay with you.
Go ahead.
Okay, cool. So, Billy Corgan, the head man of one of my absolute favorite bands, Smashing Pumpkins, is he's making a solo album, apparently. The guitarist of... So, okay, here, I'll give you a little overview of the Smashing Pumpkins.
Totally lead us in while I kind of figure this all out.
Yeah, I saw a Rolling Stone thing. I could actually plug it in right here for you.
I found the Rolling Stone article already, so feel free to talk about it.
Perfect, yeah.
Hello, welcome to live broadcasting.
Live broadcasting, we'll do it live.
Yeah. By the way, just for the record, and just for clearance, we're recording this podcast on Saturday afternoon on the 23rd to go up on the 24th.
Yep.
Just so you know, in case we're not talking about that big thing that happened tonight in the future.
Right.
That's why. Okay, Sean, go ahead while I everything else.
Yeah. So, the Smashing Pumpkins, you know, were a big band in the '90s, the 2000s, made some of just the best rock songs of that time. And the biggest problem of the Smashing Pumpkins is always the tension of Billy Corgan, because he's a perfectionist, and that led so many people to go in and out of the band. It was like a revolving door, where the guitarist for the start of their recording and a lot of their stuff is James Iha, and he left the band because he's like, he couldn't deal with working with him and whatnot. But apparently he's collaborated with Billy Corgan on this new album, which is freaking awesome to see. because those are two brilliant musicians, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. And yeah, it's really interesting to see how, you know, going away from stuff that happened in the early 2000s and whatnot, where you wouldn't talk for a while or whatnot, it's cool to see that, hey, you know, bridges can be mended, and good music can take the top shelf. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. It's gonna be cool. Smashing Pumpkins are fucking awesome. And yeah, it's kind of been a revolving door of band people, because they've had a couple different, like, I don't know how many bass players they've had at this point. They've had like 3 drummers, 2-3 guitarists, because Billy Corgan's a pain in the ass to deal with. And he admits it too. He's like, oh, I'm a perfectionist, I'm terrible to work with, and that's why people don't like it. But I mean, some of his songs were amazing. Like Mayonnaise from Siamese Dream is one of my favorite rock songs of all time, by far. And yeah, be interesting to see what he puts out. Except he's under the William Patrick Corgan. What he's going for, his name instead of Billy Corgan now. I forgot about that. Which is funny. You got anything to say?
I'm kind of embarrassed. I really don't have much to say. So I actually have one question before I continue with the rest of it.
Yeah.
Smashing Pumpkins has had a lot of different... They're still active, right? Because I think a Smashing Pumpkins album came out recently, right?
The last one came out a couple years members. Ago. There's all different... Okay. I mean, the main... Billy Corgan's been... He's the head of Smashing Pumpkins. He's always been the head of it. Because, you know, lead singer and guitarist, backing guitarist.
Frontman.
The frontman of Smashing Pumpkins. So they've had... I don't know how many bass players they've had. They've had two or three drummers, I believe. And then they've had 2 guitarists. James Iha leaving the band a while ago. And he's a prolific guitarist. He was on a different band for a while. So that's what I'm looking forward to hearing what they did together. It's going to be really cool. Because I haven't, you know, we haven't had that since 2000. Melancholy, Infinite Sadness. I think that's when that came out. I don't know. I have to double check. And so we'll see that. We'll definitely report when everything is done and settled, and when I've listened to it fully too, so we can give you more hot takes. But I definitely wanted to give people out. Hey, apparently stuff's coming out from them. So there you go.
Yeah,
live broadcasting.
I've heard one of the older Smashing Pumpkins albums. I forget what it's called, but
you've probably heard Melancholy. I haven't heard too much Sadness, because that's where, like,
that's the exact one.
1975 is on, and you know that everyone knows that song, and there's a couple others you've heard of, but they've had
I guess you could say I'm super like mainstream with Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah,
I don't know anything.
You're not like dialed in like I did, because my dad and I love them, so their early stuff especially. So
that'll be interesting to see. Mm-hmm. To go from you totally taking the wheel to me totally taking
right,
the wheel,
because you go.
You didn't listen to this.
Nope.
But
I totally forgot. My bad. Professional over here. Hey, I made up for it though, because I brought in new stuff to the table. So you know.
Yeah, and you did that great on the fly thing while the sirens are going off. That was kind of rad.
Right.
Anyways, so Open Mike Eagle. I had heard about... This is another... I did a lot of curveballs on this episode. I had heard of Open Mike Eagle before, but I had never actually listened to one of his albums. And those, like, Vox, V-O-X, those videos I've been making the rounds that go super in-depth in the music, the correspondent who does those, I think it's, like, Vox Pop or something like that, the correspondent who does those refers to Open Mike Eagle a lot. And he seems super knowledgeable about, like, rap, and, like, he loves Doom, and he, like, references all these other things.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, well, he seems, like, have some sort of, like, chops or, like, some sort of credibility, whatever. And so he released an album actually last week a little bit that I wanted to get into, because apparently we weren't talking about enough this week.
Right.
But, yeah, but you didn't listen to it, so I can just basically give what I quickly said. Everything Bam loves about
Bam from the Kendrick We Made It podcast. on the Syndicate 23 Network, the premier soccer podcast on the Syndicate 23 Network. And
they premier podcast, if we're being real.
What?
We were so bad at doing a beef. I mean, they're the premier soccer podcast. We're the premier podcast. Isn't that right, Sean?
Yeah, exactly. Because everybody's premier.
Fucking damn straight.
Fucking damn straight.
Yeah,
because
premier.
The
premier like the league. You mean... Except not like the league, because apparently they hate the league.
Well, because Premier League sucks. English football sucks. Except Jamie Vardy, because he's hilarious, but he still sucks. Yeah.
To catch people shitting on my childhood, catch out the We Made It podcast.
Right. The Cavani Speaks English podcast, because that's all that Bam talks about is Edison Cavani. Just marry him already, Bam. God, get it over with. Just move to Uruguay with him and chill. All right? Anyways.
Yeah.
We were terrible, this beef.
And so here's the thing about the new album, which is called Brick Body Kid Still Daydream. And
wait, that's a... Oh, my God. I already hate it.
Yeah. So, in case you haven't realized by the name Open Mike Eagle, and the, like, name of the title, Brick Body Kid Still Daydream, it's... He's like, one of those... He's, like, a woke poet. He's one of those spoken word guys where you're, like, after he spits quote-unquote bars, you, like, snap your fingers a little bit afterwards, after he, like, says
his lines. The album cover kind of looks like something Doom would do, actually. Looking at the album cover.
Yeah, okay. Hmm. Yeah, but, like, because that's his style of, like, this open mic, yeah, like, Open Mic Eagle, like, Open Mic Night kind of vibe.
Right.
I don't really like it too much because the flow in the songs just ends up being sort of sloppy.
Like, too spoken
some
word?
Some of the beats, yeah, like, it toes the line, I think, goes a little bit past it, but just, like, sounding like spoken word. The way he raps, like, his flow, like, the reason I was alluding to Bam earlier originally was because, the thing that Open Mike Eagle does, he really pronounces, like, and enunciates all of the verbs and the words, especially the T's. And, like, Bam says that, and in a past episode where he was on talking about music from, like, his perspective, which I think is, like, a really cool perspective.
It's also, don't get me wrong. Cool,
but he doesn't like Kendrick because of the way he pronounces, like, T's and, like,
he said, like, yeah, but he pronounces his T's, quote unquote, from Bam.
Yeah. and he's a short rapper.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he likes the more southern vibe where things are kind of almost more mumbly because y'all are drinking the lean too much. Sip, sip, scissor. But anyways, Open Mike Eagle's the direct opposite of that, and I don't like the way it sounds. It's kind of throws me off so much and gets rid of what I think is... It's the worst part is the lyrics are amazing. Like, lyrically, it's so diverse and so varied, and there's some really, like, interesting themes going within the album. I, like, can't do it justice because I listened to it through, like, about twice because I really wanted to get the lyrics down.
Right.
But, like, these themes are so deep. It was relating to, I don't know, there are definitely articles you should read, and I think I'll just point to a Consequence of Sound article that talks about it, written by Donovan Farley, so shout out to that guy, but it just kind of talks about the deep things themes he goes into, and I noticed those, and I picked up on many of them, and, like, I respect him for that. I respect him for the fact that, like, he is, like, kind of woke, and he's, like, wrapping this into his music, and it's this kind of experience, but that being said, it just is still so... strange. What song was it? I sent you a lyrics yesterday. Because one of the lyrics to one of the songs, like the chorus is ghetto children,
yeah,
hacking networks in the projects around the world.
I'm like, what?
And I'm just like, what kind of kumbaya hymn bullshit is this?
That's one way to put it.
That being said, it was like kind of catchy.
Jesus.
Lot of, you know, the projects are back in 2017. We got that Section 8.
Yeah, I mean, is Bill Gates line coming out from Section 8 or what? That's one of the hardest lines ever. From
I cannot wait to see Vince Staples.
Oh, God, that's going to be beautiful.
No, but, I was, again, like, I felt the way about this Open Mic Eagle album the same way I felt the way about the Foo Fighters album as far as how much I liked it if I gave it, like, a numerical score, which I would have been, like, a 6 or a 7.
Okay, even. So it's like...
Like, not, like, decent but not remarkable. Definitely I expected a little bit better. And
not, like, a total but, like, flop. Like, the in-between.
Like, not a total flop, but, like, the lyrics are so much better, and I don't think the production always keeps up with that, nor do I think... Open Mike Eagle's presentation really keeps up with that, but like he's got a mind. He's and I like I think I can appreciate the mind and what it lyrically creates, and I think that counts as music. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I mean, pretty much, more or less. And there's no
yeah, like it's a gray area, I think for sure, but
I don't know what you can call yeah. like the definition of music. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that.
Let's. But that's like a 7-part audio face series. That's the Christmas special.
Oh my god! I don't like. I literally, like. I wish you could see my eyes when I just said that. I got that. Like, I would go way too deep. I would have to drink alcohol for like the first time ever because I don't drink people. I'm just really, you know, I don't like alcohol much.
Fucking 7-hour podcast. Gosh,
like, you know, I need some. I don't even know what I would need to stay awake for that. Jesus Christ!
Growing a beard.
Let's
move on. We've got a lot to talk about, and you know what? There's some people who missed Sean last episode.
Hashtag free Sean.
A couple episodes ago who were like, hey, you shortchanged me an episode. And so last week I was like, okay, I'll get you a new guest, and I'll give you double the episode. People were like, okay, thanks for double the episode, but hey, let's have Sean back. And guess what? Now you have Sean back, and now we're going to have like a decently long episode.
Yes, sir.
So buckle the fuck up. Alright, Skrillex remixes Kendrick Lamar's Humble. So has every fucking other electronic music artist, so I don't give a shit. Next up on the rundown, we're gonna be talking about Next up on the rundown, there's a story in Fader written by Ruth Saxelby.
You're gonna have to lower my volume on that, because I just blew out my mic laughing too hard.
Did you appreciate how quickly I wanted to steamroll through that?
Thank you. I'm like, do you really want to talk about that?
All right. So, anyways, three labels. So there's this article in Fader, written by Ruth Saxelby,
mm-hmm.
and the article basically goes: three labels control 80% of the music industry. What responsibility comes with that power? And so I think this article is sharing her like kind of responses and opinions with the role that the heads of these music companies or like these labels are doing kind of with a Trump lens. So one paragraph goes like, how complicit are Sony, Universal, and Warner when it comes to like relating to things involving Trump? What does it say? Kazuo Hirai, the chief executive of Sony, the parent company of Sony Music, made his position on Trump clear back in January. Let's wait until he's actually inaugurated and what his policies are going to be that impact us, and then we'll deal with it, which is like the classic moderate centrist trademark argument, right? It's like the totally safe argument to make. I added that part near the end, by the way.
Yeah.
But, like, rather than talk about the point... Well, I am talking about the point of the article, but... My overall opinion, even though I am a person who talks about politics all the time, and I am a person who, we're about to talk about politics, so I don't want to sound hypocritical. That being said, I don't think it ultimately matters what these heads of these music executives think about Donald Trump.
Yeah,
because all of these, because it's not... If we had a, it was, because in news media it's a little bit different, it's a little bit shakier, but in the music industry, like, I don't see any of these large companies, all these large companies hold all of these smaller labels, and a lot of these smaller labels hold a lot of artists who have been releasing a steady stream of fuck Trump content
right.
over the past year, and none of those have been suppressed, none of those have been taken down, because, hey, guess what? Antifa buys records too.
Right, and they want to have hashtag free speech, you know, because free speech capital is Berkeley apparently this week, and that's a form of free speech in its own way, is music. So, like, it really
And so,
in theory, it shouldn't be any problems with that. If that makes any sense. I mean, and like, there hasn't been so far that I've heard of at least.
The head of I totally agree with you. Like, the head of Sony needs to be worried about PlayStations and 4K.
Right.
And some TVs. And, yeah, they do the music thing on the side. And, yeah, they have Sony Pictures. Make sure those are doing okay. I guess I don't want another interview to happen, especially because North Korea is hot. Maybe that's a political concern for the head of Sony. But other than that, like, I could give a shit about the head of, like, Sony's opinion, or the head of Universal Music Group's opinion.
Right.
Up until the point where it's clear that artists who are, like, big names and otherwise big names, or people who, like, should be doing well, are being suppressed for their political message. Left or right. Because, I mean...
Left, right, centrist,
I could get into dicey topics about... I could get dicey about the things happening in Berkeley right now, and this, but we're talking about music and we're talking about entertainment, okay? You get a lot more pull and say in entertainment than you do in regular political discourse and dialogue and conversations. And so as long as that's being expressed on the left and the right, from Ted Nugent to Prophets of Rage, like, that is totally fine. And as long as artists are able to, like, pull up and have that voice, I don't see this sort of too conservative argument. I mean, I appreciate that people are having this lens to things, but there's a danger to applying this lens to everything, is that you kind of look alarmist, and then the people on the right who, and I don't even understand why I'm making this argument of apologizing to people on the right and how they think anymore, but it makes it seem like you're alarmist about everything. It's like, oh, how come Target's not anti-Trump? It's like, why does Target need to be anti-Trump? Like, what is Target doing?
And this is the whole thing of what I was saying, going back to Warren is a little bitch, is that you have this thing of everybody has these goddamn takes and they don't know what they're talking about. And it's just, it's overplayed bullshit and annoying now, basically. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's like, God, okay. Now everybody apparently has a degree in political econ. Shout out to Dan on the podcast right now as a political econ major.
Don't sleep senior year.
Don't sleep on your boy. Or people who have read political theories and this and that have been in it their whole lives too, and it's just, God, stop. Just, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's it there.
But, and I guess I'll just move this in right now, because it's a bit unavoidable and we've already been talking about it.
Right.
But, this, I'm, I am, of course, as most people in audio face know, I'm in Berkeley during these protests and things, and I'm going to be participating in events and things around surrounding Free Speech Week and talking about those things. Actually, shortly after we started the podcast, it was announced that Free Speech Week had been canceled. For those people who don't know, Free Speech Week was this, like, dumb thing where a couple of political provocateurs were trying to come to campus to get Black Bloc rioters from the anti-fascist wing of politics to come in and, like, it basically is like a bait and switch kind of game, right?
Pretty much.
And it's this big controversy. Millions of dollars are being spent and wasted. It's causing this political argument. President's tweeting about it, whatever. But if you're interested in any of those things, I'm going to be putting up an article for Huffington Post about all of it, canceled or not, whether Milo does dumb bullshit or not. And I'm going to have that up on Monday. So check all those things out. I might also be doing some special collaborations. Look out for that. But the best way to know is just to follow me on social media, which you can do in the show notes for this episode. Lots of plugging today. Lots of plugs. All right. Lots of butt plugs. Let's move on from that. But we're
not moving away from politics.
A little bit.
We're not moving away from politics at all, because Young Prophets of Rage. Oh my God, their debut album, the supergroup, one of the best supergroups, one of the most hyped supergroups since Atoms for Peace formed in 2013. These guys formed in 2016, and it's members of Audioslave, Public Enemy, and Cypress Hill. So, here, what were you going to say?
Let me just go down the rundown really fast.
How about it?
Tom Morello,
mm-hmm.
Mostly known from Rage Against the Machine and Audioslave.
Yeah, I mean, he's coolest, weirdest guitarists ever. dude does some weird stuff on guitar, and it's awesome.
Tim Comerford, bass guitar, backing vocals, also from Rage and Audioslave.
Mm-hmm. And the drummer.
Yeah, Brad Wilk, also Rage and Audioslave, the drummer. You have DJ Lord from Public Enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal drummer. Chuck D, also from Public Enemy. He's also done things with Rage Against the Machine before, too, so of course that's why they're related. And then, goddammit, you have Be Real from Cypress Hill.
Whoa. When I heard that they were getting together, I'm like, that's kind of dope. Like, that's going to be wild.
What kind of Gorillaz album bullshit is this?
I'm like, this is going to be the most angry album of politics I'm ever going to hear in my life. It was. their music video that I watched yesterday was one of the craziest videos I've ever seen in my life. And it's okay, like, so, it's so being
can,
serious.
Can I please really fast about the video?
Go. Go in.
It's like if Super Deluxe had 5 days to trigger Breitbart as hard as possible. That's the music video for Prophets of Rage. If Super Deluxe had unlimited amount, like, had like 5 days and a limited but decent amount of money to trigger Breitbart. To make Breitbart go into a 5-alarm fire, to make 4chan shit itself, to make, like, the Daily Stormer just go mad. Like, it went wild. It was great.
It was brilliant. It was amazing and beautiful to watch. And I'm like, when you sent me the video, I go, wait, this is a thing. Yeah. Hail to the Chief, the music video. It is freaking amazing.
And it's basically like you see, sorry, I just got a breaking news alert thing that got distracted from it. It's basically the music video, it puts Mike Pence as like the puppet master holding the strings. And that's kind of what the song is about. The idea that, like, Mike Pence is the luckiest son of a bitch to get political. Because apparently son of a bitch is a political term, thanks to yesterday. But it's like Mike Pence is this, like, supreme overlord that's, like, used... And it's got some really vicious imagery. Like, you've got people getting hung. You've got Trump Sieg Heiling. You've got, like, really intense imagery. And so... just going into that video, because, yeah, it did actually, like, make the right-wing media kind of go into a firestorm, which was hilarious. It's controversial, and it's subversive, and as I listened to the rest of the album, but I watched that video instead of listening to that song on the album, and I sat back and I realized, wait, this is must be what it felt like to first hear N.W.A. Like,
oh yeah, actually,
I finally got it. Like,
that's
something
really good.
This brutally offensive against like the government, and like this angry and this intense is like, wait, no, this is what it must have been like to live through N.W.A. Because we're too young for that. Like, just barely, but yeah, we were like not born / toddlers when N.W.A. was at their peak.
Yeah,
right. But
yeah,
pretty no, much. This is what it feels like.
And yeah, now I see what they mean with that. That's a really good comparison. Because that's pretty much, yeah, exactly, like, whoa. That's what I felt when I listened to it. I go, this is freaking
like,
ridiculous.
Like, they pulled absolutely no punches when it came to any of their political speech. Like, I'm going to pull up the songs really fast, but, like, every single song they had, like, had some sort of bent. The photo, like, the cover photo is, like, a star and a fist raised up. Like, Legalize Me is just, like, a weed love song, basically.
Right?
Who Owns Who is, like, a Black Lives Matter anthem already. Like, it's weird because, like I said, I ended up realizing that, yeah, this must be what it was like when N.W.A. was, like, in their prime and people were really noticing what they were talking about because they were so politically blunt and intense, like, you couldn't ignore them.
Right.
But as I was listening to the album, I was like, okay, even for me, this is kind of, like, almost preachy, and it just like
they
got stoned and were watching Vice and the Young Turks for like a couple like months and then decided to make an album for it.
They watched too much Telesur English and Abby Martin going deep into Zionist Israel stuff. It's like, whoa, guys, calm down there. You gotta take a Valium and chill, all right? Like, You're going too deep.
Chuck D watching aggressive progressives.
Jesus. he read Hillary Clinton's book and is like, oh my god, I can't deal this anymore. This hashtag no politics.
Book is like, we're gonna make an album in 1 week.
It was hilarious to listen to too, because I'm like, this is like serious on it, and it's like you can't like take it seriously, and at the same time
I think the lyrics sounded so fake to me, because
that's a good way to
they
put it.
Weren't holding anything back, because like they were kind of just saying things just straight up. They weren't hiding it. Like,
no, not at all.
Yeah, the kind of sentiment, like calling a song "Legalize Me" when it's kind of about marijuana, when I don't know, it could be about undocumented immigrants.
Right.
If they didn't also have a song about like undocumented rights, like the rights of being a citizen, that would be a little suspect, and that would sound almost like corporate woke to me, right?
Right.
But like, that could also, and I think it is really, just considering the context, that's just them being blunt. That's just them being like real and like honest and how they feel. And what boosted that cred for me was seeing the video. Once I saw the video, like, wait, no, that's way too offensive to be corporate woke. They are just dead fucking serious.
Right.
Like, that kind of saved it, really. And then from there, like, yeah, that's gonna, this is, I had first heard about this album from Joe Rogan's podcast. I think I remember mentioning that, and I thought the songs are really cool, and now to see it like all come together as an album, it also works together, but this is basically like the Antifa love song.
Yeah, it really just, is at this point.
It's perfect for that whole group. But no, it's great. It's, as for musically, because we haven't actually talked about musically how it is, we just talked about a lot about like lyrically and the tone. It's just like hard rock with rap over it,
pretty much, which is amazing. Yeah, like that's it. It's pretty simple.
Like, every song sounds like late 2000s, early 2010s, like fun Lenny Kravitz, when he's like half a rapper and half a rock star. Like, with the pants and like basically like bursting his dick through his pants. Like, that's how fun this album sounds.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty accurate right there. I mean, it's decent. It's just, I can't take it seriously. It's just too funny to me. It's hard not to, but yeah. Anyways, going into more Sean favorite music people. So New Order.
Sean, take the wheel.
Take the wheel. So New Order, as we've been talking about with all of my favorite bands, New Order, one of my top five favorite bands of all time. They announced a full and final settlement with Peter Hook. Finally, Jesus Christ. Peter Hook is the bassist of New Order / Joy Division. For those of you who don't know, Joy Division was a band in the late 70s until Ian Curtis committed suicide, and then the remaining members created New Order, adding a keyboardist as well. And it's like they were the voice of the 80s, like really big into it, made some amazing tracks. But Peter Hook is kind of a cunt. And like, it's weird because
what did he do?
The way of Bernard and Bernard Somers, the frontman of New Order, and Peter Hook, they've kind of like had a beef and this and that, where, so the big thing is he sued his former bandmates over royalties of New Order and Joy Division because of how much, like, you see a lot of angsty teenagers with Joy Division shirts and this and that on, and he's like, hey...
Because the band that he quit and, like, helped form, he quit before they got big, and so he got Bitterman and, like, won money for it.
No, he quit in 2007.
Oh. Oh, okay. I read that wrong. I had read it as, like, 2001 or something.
Yeah. No, it's, like, it's a whole thing of them, like, the merchandising promotion and the amount of money received, this or that, from the use of New Order, and it's just a whole annoying thing. And it was just, he's kind of an asshole, like, honestly. And yeah, it's just good that it's finally kind of settled down, because there is a whole beef between them, at least Bernard and Peter, for a while, and it, like, for people like me who are big fans of the band, you don't like to see that, where, you know, there's bad blood between the guys.
Yeah.
They're, like, you could tell when Peter Hook was playing on stage the past couple of years, he looked angry and this and that, and I mean, that's why he left the band. And
then, yeah, like he was collecting a check.
Yeah, and in the interview, you could tell he was just really angry, this and that. Bernard is just normal, weird dude from England who's just chill and playing music. But that's my thing on it. I know a lot of people are big fans of Peter Hook and this and that. So there's kind of a big divide between fans, too, of New Order. But I'm glad to see that
that's
done.
Interesting. And I just, like... Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess I'd just, like... It sucks how people get like that with bands when like they change artists, because like it's hard to have that pressure to build like and have that chemistry, I suppose, like as artists and stick with that for a long time. And it's definitely the exception, not the rule. But I mean, the fact that fans split over that, like, that's just wild to me.
Yeah.
I guess I haven't had a lot of bands where like group members switch out or like where that's relevant.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, I've been in New Order for my whole life, so I remember when that happened in 07, so I'm just glad it's finally done and dealt with, so that way New Order can keep going on, because they made a great album 2 years ago, so. Oh, that's sad. Okay, Dan just put
I'll lead this. Sean, you can, like, read up ahead. So, yeah, as there's so much stuff happening. I actually got a news notification, that there's some protests going down on Telegraph, like one of the main roads on campus.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Which is, like, weird. There's so much breaking news happening at this magical time we do. And I'll have a... You know, so I'll just go into it. So Charles Bradley, who's this, like, amazing soul singer, like, there's this generation of soul singers around his age, like him and Bobby Womack and, like, a couple others who just had these, like, amazing set of voices, this amazing, like, set of pipes that you can't really replicate.
Yeah, it's interesting because they got like big later,
so
in life
distinct
too. From what I remember.
Yeah, I seem to remember. So I haven't like I've heard a few Charles Bradley like songs and related things like here and there, but this is definitely a big story because he's just like
just passed away.
He's just like, got one of those like booming voices. Yeah, and I guess I didn't mention that earlier. He died at 68.
Today,
battling cancer.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember he was diagnosed with cancer last year, 2016.
News broke while we were recording the podcast. I was like trying to figure out where to fit it in.
That's sad to see that. I mean, he wasn't too old. He was only late 60s, probably, right? Yeah, 68. So that's sad to see. That's a really put it down on the calendar
earlier
for a second.
I'd read there earlier in life, he was, like, a James Brown impersonator.
Oh, right yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. And,
And then he kind of made a thing of his own. That's so cool.
Yeah. That's really sad to see. Oh, well. People move on. So, okay.
And left a lot of great music to kind of go through, so at least there's that.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of good stuff. So, again, if you like soul, there you go. There's some stuff to listen to for you there. On to a different note. Rolling Stone magazine. So for sale, apparently.
I love how you say apparently for every single news story. Like, that's how you present. Apparently, this is happening. Apparently. It's like giving you a little bit of edge, like, allegedly.
Yeah,
allegedly.
Well, just in case, because I've seen so many articles lately that have been like, oh, this is happening. Oh, it's not happening, like, 3 days later. So that's why I'm always saying apparently it is. So I'm waiting until...
You know what? You're so right. That's just a reflection of what the world is now.
Yeah, and definitely, that's what's going on. So I'm like, hey, you just gotta stay on track. So, yeah, apparently they're on sale, and,
previously, I mean, it was owned by the founder, Jan Wenner. Mm-hmm. He had founded Wenner Media, and they've, like, owned Rolling Stone ever since they, like, started up, since 1967.
This makes me happy.
But now they're looking...
No, just saying, its writers have included the likes of Lester Beams, Tom Wolfe, and Hunter S. Thompson. Our boy.
Hunter S. Thompson.
Our boy. That guy.
One of the greatest gifts to journalism and my inspiration.
Oh, that dude is mental.
So this reminds me a lot of the Gawker thing. So, a little bit of context. A thing that's happening with Rolling Stone is that the They had a story a couple of while ago about a sexual assault that had allegedly occurred, I think, at the University of Virginia or North Carolina.
Right.
And it had been found that it was a false report. And so the person who was accused sued Rolling Stone for running the story for, like, assassination of character and defamation and things like that. Right, right. And this story, like, that had happened a couple of weeks ago. And then this story comes up. This reminds me a lot of what happened between Hulk Hogan and Gawker. When Gawker ran some salacious story, Hulk Hogan and a couple of people like sued them out of existence, and like that's really scary given this context, because of like if you can just get journalists make mistakes, like where there are people too. I think the difference is that journalists try to be honest with their mistakes rather than like purposely misleading people. I think that's the separation of it. And Gawker is not the best example for me personally, but it's just scary to, like, think that you can be sued out of existence for a mistake.
Right.
Or, like, you face serious financial troubles. And you just, like, it's not like the defamation, or, like, not like the numerical value of these suits is anything more like, this is the exact amount of money that I lost because of the article that was written, even though it's going to be painted that way, like, in the eyes of the law. What it really is, it's like, getting you to shut the fuck up. It's getting you to not report on certain things. It's getting you to just, like,
it's
hold back.
Yeah.
That's the way, as, like, someone who's in this, I see it. That's how I see it.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, you got it spot on with that. It does remind me a lot of, we talked about that on this, that was on this podcast, right? Like, very early on with the Hulk Hogan thing, right? That was...
We talked about it a couple episodes ago. I don't even remember.
That was like May or June. Definitely. Because I remember talking about that, and that's pretty much spot on to it. I mean, that's just a big thing of the state of the industry. Jesus, I can't talk.
Yeah. We're almost done.
Yeah. So, but state of music industry, and going to another big alternative
band. Album review.
And I mean, this is one of the biggest alternative bands in the world. Are the Killers? They came back in the first album since Battleborn in 2012, which I didn't like at all because it was annoying. And they did Wonderful, which I give it like a good 8 out of 10, 7 out of 10, 7.9. Like, it's a solid album. I still think they rely too much on the lead singer's voice. So not like it's a powerful voice, but it's a little overkill. Like, if that makes any sense.
It does.
Because the Killers have one song that is one of the best alternative songs ever made, ever, which is All the Things I've Done. On Hot Fuss, that was, shit, when was that? 2004. Yeah, that was 2004. That is one of the best rock songs ever made. And, or alternative rock, as it's not pure rock, whatever. And
yeah, but...
And then what happened with the Killers is they've kind of gone into the Coldplay trajectory of sellout bullshit, which a lot of people have done. And you kind of either love the Killers or hate them, because I know a lot of people that love them and a lot of people that hate them. And I'm one of the few that's kind of neutral. I like some of their works, and I don't like a lot of their works. It's kind of hit or miss. This album has a few good songs in it, like The Man, Rut, Run for Cover, Tyson versus Douglas. Or Douglas, however you want to pronounce it. It's a solid, decent album. They didn't do anything crazy or wild, but it just, like, you kind of expect it from them, if that makes any sense. I mean, I don't know if you feel the same way, but that's pretty much all my take on it. Short and sweet. It's good stuff, but nothing crazy. And I still think they rely too much on Brandon's voice, where it's, like, it's such a powerful voice. It's kind of hard to hide it in the back. But they did that in their opening album, their first album, Hot Fuzz, where they did that, or Hot Fuss. They kind of held it back.
It's okay, I do the same thing.
And but the past couple of albums, they did the Coldplay of, like, overblowing pop stuff, and it's okay, but nothing too wild. Like, it's a solid album. What's your take?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I felt, too. Yeah, like, I had, of course, Love the Killers, great alternative band, but going into this, not really knowing what to expect, because I haven't heard many of their albums since Hot Fuss. Hot Fuss, yeah.
Well, you'll know Hot Fuss and then Sam's Town, where I think their first two albums, if I'm not mistaken, as those two were fantastic. You definitely know Sam's Town.
I didn't even know Sam's Town. I only knew Hot Fuss.
Well, because you know when you were young, you know that song, and you know the song Sam's Town, because I played that in my car a lot. I know that.
Yeah.
And then Read My Mind. You know those three songs, at least. Maybe not the entire album.
I know them, but I definitely don't, like, remember them even super well. Right. So, like, it's
well, it's been a while. Regardless,
it's not... Yeah, it's definitely been a long time. And, yeah, there are songs that were decent on here. They're really good, but it just kind of all... It sounded like it didn't really break above a certain point. It kind of just...
Oh, okay. That's a good way to put it.
Got up to a certain tone, or got up to a... I don't know how to really describe that sense, but it just got up to a certain level of musicality, I guess, if you will, and didn't really exceed that in tempo or, like, in pace or in beat or, like, in tone or even volume. It just kind of felt very reserved or, like, conserved or pulled back. And I'm not really sure why. I mean, we're always saying, like, break through barriers and, like, try new things. And it's weird. I know I usually don't read album reviews, but I couldn't help but read, apparently, what Consequence of Sound said. And it said, the Killers have rarely sounded so experimental, so unencumbered, and this is a compliment mid-tempo. I only agree with mid-tempo. It just didn't really sound that experimental to me. It just sounded, like, mellow. Middling. And so that's really, like, pretty much how I felt about it. There are songs that are definitely good. Like, I liked Run for Cover a bit.
Yeah, that's a good song. It's solid. Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. They didn't push the envelope or anything. They kind of just did a normal whatever song that they've done for their entire careers, which, I mean, isn't a bad thing. It's nice, but it's nothing wild or anything different, which I was kind of disappointed. I listened to the Killers album first, and I was put in a good mood. I'm like, okay, like, it's not bad. I'm happy. Like, it's good stuff. And then I listened to The Horrors afterwards, and I was, like, blown away. I go, oh, wow, this is so overshadowed now. Like, unbelievably.
That's kind of how I felt, too, honestly. Like, it was... The Killers tend not to be the least interesting thing I talked about this week, or, like, listened to this week.
It really is. Which is funny. I thought when we were doing this, I'm like, oh, this is going to be one of the biggest things we talk about. It really isn't. It was kind of just chill, and it's mainly because of how big of a band they are, by how many people listen to them. You know, they sold out shows and how So
decent of an album this is, but, like, I... Oh, sorry for the loud screeching thing, but I don't know why... Like, usually when a new album comes out for a band I even, like, kind of like or I'm kind of into... I can kind of see, oh yeah, I might actually even want to, like, go see them live, because, like, this sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Nothing on this album motivates me to, like, want to go see them live.
No, it's just, like...
Except to, like, hear Hot Fuss at the end.
Pretty much. I mean, like, I'll still listen to the song. It's not like it's just a one-time listen. I'll still listen to the album, for sure. I have to be in a mood to listen to it. You know, it's like, oh, I really want to just listen to The Killers. You know, their new album's pretty good. Let me put it on. Like, it's nothing, like... It's not like an everyday thing with, like, Sigur Rós. I can listen to a Sigur Rós album whenever I want. Or Bjork, who actually...
The Horrors, I'm going to be listening to
a lot. The Horrors, we're going to be listening to a lot. Or, like, Bjork, who's one of my favorite artists. Actually, her album, Homogenic, came out 20 years ago yesterday, which is, like, holy crap.
I had just seen that.
So then all day yesterday, I was listening to Homogenic, just going nuts in my car, blasting it, because it's... Oh god, that's a masterpiece of an album. We also have to do a top five albums of all time, this and that too. Because I remember, like, Bam gave us the idea of doing the Sounds That Give You Chills, but I need to do, like, a top five stuff of all time. We need to do that, like, at the end of the year. Because Homogenic is definitely...
I definitely want to do...
I know of this year, for
sure. I want to do 2 year-in episodes for, just so we can, like, have a break and, like, release something still.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I would definitely... That'd be a cool idea to do.
Definitely.
Ah! Make sure you... We need to make sure we get all these down and collect them, because that's going to be... That's going to take a while to produce.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot.
Yeah. Last thing.
Last thing.
Lastly, you know we like to close up with the most important news of the day.
Jesus
Yoko Ono has forced John Lemon Soft Drink to change their name. John Lemon.
Yoko Ono.
Lemon. Oh, my God. Yoko Ono.
She is one interesting human, to say the least.
There are mixed opinions on her. Mostly, I don't really care about because, like, I didn't grow up during the age of the Beatles at all. I just, like, listened to it and, like, enjoyed the music, and so there's not really much I can say. But definitely, Yoko's a polarizing figure.
Oh, God, yes. And that's an understatement.
To say the least. But the company has agreed to change the drink's name to On Lemon instead of John Lemon.
Mm.
Instead of John Lennon. This is so dumb.
Oh my god.
Just so, stop. Wait. Ono's lawyers warned the company that they face costs in the range of €5,000 a day. 5,000 euros a day. And 500 euros for every bottle sold.
What? Oh my god. Why? It's somebody just trying to be clever, alright? Don't... Whatever, it's stupid.
It's because there's money to be made.
Yeah, exactly. Just be real. To be real, and that's always... Like, if there's money to be made, it'll be made. Pretty much in these times.
That's pretty much all speech... All free speech week is. It's people who are just making money whatever way they can. And, like, some people have found a way to make money by... lying to two people at the same time, and like that's what we're dealing with. I went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but yeah, those are the times we're in. Everything's horrible, everyone's lying, but the music's still pretty good.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
that's depressing. Every like consecutive tweet I get in is just like a little bit worse, but with that, we'll let everyone get back to your regular scheduled life. Thank you very much for listening.
Cheers,
thank you,
guys.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
How was the race? Tell the folks about the race.
Yeah. So I did Malibu Triathlon. Did okay. Got second age group, top 50 overall. I still don't know what place I'm in, officially. And did my day job pretty much. I have some bike and run. Next year will be a lot of short course racing, which is what I'm good at, and I'll be actually making my bread and butter from, so really looking forward to next year's racing. Just follow me on, mainly I use Instagram, which is at SWSORS, and I occasionally tweet, but I hate Twitter on Android, so I don't use it that much as I used to. And Instagram...
Twitter on Android and Twitter on iPhone are about the same.
I don't know why. I think they updated Twitter and then changed the entire thing interface when I got my Pixel back in February. And I just didn't like it. And I just stopped using it. So, because I think I didn't update Twitter for a while when I used to be a communist Apple lover.
But I think it's the algorithmic change to where it shows... Sorry, I think it's the algorithmic change to where it shows tweets in like an order of what it thinks it wants you to see.
Yeah, exactly, and I hated that so much, so...
They can make more money. They make more money.
Yeah, pretty much.
But whatever. No, that was fantastic. I was very happy for you. Hope you liked last week's episode with Tammy.
Yeah, hashtag free Sean. Sean was freed and came out smoking gun, tried to do a podcast beef, but failed because... They're my boys for life, and I love them. So.
Oh, no. The gauntlet has been thrown.
No, I mean, it has been
thrown. And we made it. Y'all are going to have to respond. Yeah, if
we are the response, the premier then, podcast. You guys aren't the premier, so I don't know what you want to do on that. So,
here's the thing. If there's no response by next week, we're going to have to do a little bitch segment. Not say anything, just saying. Just throwing it out there. If you would like, don't forget to go to wemadeit.syndicate23.co to listen to that podcast about soccer, which is honestly the most irritating podcast about soccer.
It really is.
But that's not saying much.
That's hilarious.
But no, also great podcast. And yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Dan from, sorry. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan from the web and on Instagram at Dan from the internet. I'm going to be posting a lot of things relating to Free Speech Week and stuff. So check that out also as well. Facebook.com/Dan from the internet. And anything else?
No, that really should be it. So thanks for listening, guys.
Have a good week.
Yeah. Cheers.
Kill for the siren.
Kill for the siren? Okay.
Yeah. So it's USC. I'll probably include this bit in like the end just for fun, but it's USC versus Cal, and so all of the USC. There it is. USC. What do we call people from USC? What do we call USC football fans?
Cucks. Spoiled children. Spoiled chickens. This university spoiled chickens.
Let's just say their parents should remember the Trojans.
Jesus Christ.
Let's just say it's a good thing their legacy, because their children otherwise wouldn't have made it that far.
Dude,
I'm feeling edgy. Free speech week, baby.
I mean, I think I came out too hot. I'm like, I kind of feel bad right now. I want to, like, text Cam and Caesar and be like, I love you guys. Like, this is just beef, all right? It's just beef. That's it. Like, I love you. Like, oh, man. I took it too far already. Day one of podcast beef.